At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, what do you do when you wake up in the middle of the night to see a translucent woman standing by your bed? Is it really something you can ignore and just go back to sleep with? Or do you get out and try to figure out exactly what's going on? That and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. Phone number 855-853-4802 to share your real ghost story with us, or write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Audio files, you can send those to me if you want to record it on your mobile device, and just send me that MP4 or whatever it is. Send it to Tony, T-O-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. Support our program, keep us on the air, and get all those bonus episodes if you're not already doing so. It's being an EPP, an extra podcast person. Go to ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories to get in on all of that. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you once again. And how are you this fine day, Miss Carol?
Oh, Tony, on this fine day, I'm just fine. Thank you.
On this fine day, yes.
Yes, thank you for asking.
I always have to.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I've been doing the eating better in 2020 thing, and I'm still sticking with it, so that's good. I've lost 10 pounds.
And I did notice that you're on Instagram now.
My goodness, yes, I am. I'm trying to be social. So,
in fact, you and Jenny both on Instagram now.
She kind of inspired me to do it. She's like, you really should have both. Because I've had the Ghost Podcast one. I kind of have used it. But I haven't been like super personal on it. So I created both. And now I am there at Tony Bruschi. If anyone wants to join and follow or whatever the term is. Stalk. You know, it's follow.
Well, welcome to Instagram.
Do you like Instagram? I know you're on Instagram.
I love it. Okay. I love it. And primarily, I think most people follow me to follow my very senior dog.
Okay.
Because Buddy has followers from all over the world. People don't really care about me, but they do care about my dog.
Just strangers.
Which is really sweet.
That's good. I mean, that's good that they, are you just at Carol Hughes? Is that your Instagram?
I'm just Carol Hughes. Just, I got on Instagram so long ago that Carol Hughes wasn't taken.
Oh my gosh.
So that's just me. I know, right?
Wow. Yeah.
I was the first Carol Hughes.
You are the first Carol Hughes, and you still are. You should be like,
so if you want to see pictures of my dog, mm-hmm. my cats, and occasionally people, you can follow me.
Occasionally people. Well, that's good. I'm glad we have that out there. I've been following a lot of people and everything, so I'm trying to figure out my feed and what I want to mute and what I don't want to mute, just so I can kind of, you know, like things that I want to see and things that I don't want to see and all that.
Yeah, because I follow a lot of dogs, obviously.
Yeah.
And certain celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like it because you can kind of create the feed that you want.
Yeah.
You know, you can follow and unfollow.
It kind of reminds me of Facebook before it got shitty. where basically the algorithm was, you know, hijacked to be, if you want to get something from, you know, so everybody can see it, you got to pay to promote it. And then you're starting to see tons of stuff from people you don't want to see or don't care about. And right. When it was enjoyable, and now it's just, I don't know. It's a necessary thing. You got to be there on both. I understand. But whatever happened to Snapchat? Is anybody on Snapchat anymore? Is that dead?
No, it's not dead. And I do have it.
Yeah.
And I use it about 3 times a year just to make funny pictures.
Yeah.
But the app itself reminds me of an app, just the design of it, that's kind of for middle school kids.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know what I mean? Just the way it looks.
And the funny thing is that the middle school kids who were using it 4 years ago are now graduated. So
yeah, they've moved on to another app they like better, I'm sure.
They're on to something else now. I'm just waiting for the recycling of apps for MySpace is new again. And suddenly it's like everybody's back there going, oh, have you been on MySpace? This is awesome. It's like the animated GIF or GIF image, which was a big thing in the 90s. And then we all said the colors suck. Dancing babies are getting old and we're not going to use them anymore. And then a whole new generation has no recollection of this, suddenly found these things. They're like, look at these animated GIFs or GIFs images. It's like, yep, been there, done that, long time ago.
So long ago.
Yeah. And it's like, these are not, it's not, like, not a new find that you suddenly came across. This shit's been around for a long time. But
I think the one thing I like about Snapchat is if I want to look 20 years younger and someone who really knows how to do her makeup really well, I can do that.
Yeah, you just press the button and then suddenly it's just like all facial aging is gone.
It's amazing, right?
It is amazing. I've seen some people who, where it's like, oh my God, like I think all of their cover photos on every social media platform are really just a screen grab off of Snapchat on a filter. And it's like, holy shit. It's like you de-aged like 40 years. That's amazing. You know, I thought you were 97. What happened?
And then you run into him in real life. Yeah. It's like, oh, you're really old.
Yeah, it's amazing what it can do. It's de-aging people. So anyway, so follow us. And that's the point of that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to our first story. It says, I believe my ex-fiance's living ex-girlfriend visited me one night in spirit form. Sounds crazy, I know. But as you will see, I have a good reason to believe it was her. I'd love to hear your opinion on it. I'm sensitive, so I'm used to feeling things around me and have had quite a few paranormal experiences throughout my life. However, nothing like this has happened, except for that night, before or since. I'd awaken in the middle of the night to a strong sensation that a woman was standing by my bed. Like I said, I've felt and seen things before, but usually I can ignore it. However, this time I felt certain that if I opened my eyes, I would see a woman staring at me, full of rage. Why she was so angry with me, I had no idea at the time, but later discovered something that might explain it. Keeping my eyes closed, I reached over to my lamp, hoping nothing would reach out and touch me. Thankfully, nothing did. And as soon as I switched on the light, the feeling went away. I decided to dismiss it and went back to sleep. In my dream, I saw a woman with brown hair who was coming after my ex-fiance, who I am still friends with, and I could tell she had evil intentions toward him. I didn't say anything to him the next day, as we don't talk every day, but I went to visit him the day after, and this is where everything I had experienced gets interesting. He brought up to me that his ex's mother had called him out of the blue, asking him to come to pick her daughter up from a bus station. He declined because he now lived in a different town than her, though her mom didn't know that he had moved. I thought that was a little odd. Apparently, he felt very close to her family still, though they never talked, but he had no desire to see his ex after everything she had put him through. I asked, does your ex have brown hair? He looked stunned and said, yes. How'd you know that? I explained the experience of feeling the angry woman by my bed and the dream that I'd had. I personally think it was a warning of some sort. But then why would her spirit visit me? According to him, she doesn't know I exist. But this spirit was very clearly angry at me. I could feel it was directed at me personally. Do you think people can astral project and not know it and visit people that they don't know? I look forward to hearing what you think of this situation. It's an interesting thing. It's something that honestly has been coming up more and more frequently on this show. I have a guest on the Grave Talks coming up soon where we're going to be talking about this very thing. But yeah, I think it's a thing. Carol?
So when is that coming up on the Grave Talks? Because I'd really like to hear that. Because it's one of those things I have a hard time wrapping my brain around.
Yeah, I don't have the exact date. I think I'm recording that one. I don't know if it's this week or what, but it honestly, by the time it airs, it'll probably be closer to spring, early summer, possibly. And this episode of this show is going to be airing in February, but that's probably about when it will drop. May-ish, maybe, or April, May.
I just think it's so hard. I can't wrap my brain around that.
Oh, so like,
but of course I can totally buy into ghosts and spirits and all that. So, I mean, if you can buy into one, why not both?
It's an energy thing. And to me, it almost makes more sense. To me, it's easier to understand than ghosts, I think, to a certain extent. I don't know how it is done, but I think there is a way to have your energy in a different place. If you're focusing on it in some way, shape, or form, this is an ability that we have, not very well tapped into. I think sometimes we skirt into it accidentally and we're doing this without even knowing we're doing this. But I think there are ways of controlling this and understanding this in much greater detail. But yeah, I think it's a thing, especially when you think about the situation that they're talking about. You're talking about someone who's upset and mad that their lover has moved on and they've moved on to someone else, and they're a jealous person and they're angry and they're not over it, and they don't want the idea of that person being with someone else is such an intensely emotional thing to contemplate that they don't even have to know who the other who this new person is. They're just in their mind having these vengeful thoughts of going after that person and showing their displeasure with it, which I think can make sense in this story because they said they don't even know who I am or that I exist. But that energy is going and is being directed at that person, and somehow the magic of the universe knows where to take that. Like the internet, it's like, well, there's where it's supposed to go. You put the number in, you may not know who you're calling, but the universe does.
But I think it would be an extremely rare thing because that situation is super common. The obsessive ex who stalks you. I mean, I hate to sound like this, but I mean, everybody's had a stalker at one point, I would think. I mean, it's so common that I've had a few over the years in a couple of really intense situations. And but I've never had that happen.
Were they astral projected to your house?
Yeah, they just showed up. Like, maybe that was the problem. Yeah. Like, they just couldn't stay away. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to sit out here. I'm going to watch her come home. Sure. I remember one night this guy I was dating, he would hide behind trees my front yard. And I'd be like, hello, Larry, I know you're out there. You might want to go on home. And like, what? I would call the cops now. Like, that would freak me out. But I just remember the time being, go home.
Ha ha, Larry, that's enough. Get up behind the maple. I know you're there.
Larry.
Was he like a sad golden retriever when you called him out, like, oh, you got me, and then just kind of shamefully walked away? Or how did that go?
Well, I could see him hiding behind the tree.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, you're not even good at this hiding thing. I can see you. I'm going to bed and you need to leave. I don't want to talk to you tonight. You just got to go. And he did. Like, but then I've had other guys that I dated that it wasn't quite that easy.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I think that if it was a common thing.
Sure.
I think maybe it's just certain people could do it.
I don't know.
Or maybe it's certain level of craziness. It's like astral projection.
I think it's more common than we realize, quite honestly. I think that there's more ghost situations that are going on in this world where people are experiencing hauntings or energy that shouldn't be there. And they're immediately attributing it to the dead, or even upon further investigation, they have no idea who it is or why they're there. Or they're putting false assignments as to who it is because someone died nearby 100 years ago, so it must be them because there's no one else that's been around here in 100 years. And I think that there's more of this that happens with the living haunting the living than we're aware of. And I think it happens unintentionally and without the knowledge of either party. I really could see, I think sometimes when we are having extremely vivid dreams or moments, that we could very well be doing this. Maybe not completely visible.
Ooh, I just hate the idea of being a ghost and upsetting somebody. Like, I didn't mean to. Oh,
and maybe it's not we're going to be visible to everyone that's around us.
The fact I could do it to one person.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I'm so sorry.
It'd be wonderful to learn how to control. But the thing is, things like this, and these things have had a lot of scientific study done on them, specifically in World War II. Hitler was actually trying to work on a version of astral projection for the war. And I don't know how far it got or what it was, but there are people to this day that still, I don't want to say that they sympathize with him, because my understanding is of this, from what I little knowledge I have, it's more so they're interested in the science of it, not his cause, but more so the science of this being a thing. That in itself is scary. I mean, it's all scary, but if this is a thing that you can hone in on, that's very scary. I just did have someone on the show the other day on the Grave Talks who said that they had astral projected, and it's just kind of coming back to me right now, where they were in a dream. She said that she's been able to astral project to her mother's house almost on command. She's kind of got it down. And it's a sensitive family. The mother sometimes can sense and realize that she's there. But then this one experience she had with astral projection got essentially sucked away out of where she was going, didn't know what the hell was going on, and was in a very strange situation. She was in a situation where she was in a house that was burning in an area that she did not know anything about. She did not know the individual who she then saw in this astral projection in this new place that she was at. And there were several other people there who were also trying to get out of this burning house. She woke up from this dream and what she called an astral projection, and said to her husband, "I don't know what the hell just happened, but I was at my mom's house in what I think was an astral projection. Suddenly I was snapped into some other place. And there was a strange man there, and he asked me what state I'm in. And I told him, and then apparently, this is according to her story, within a couple weeks, she gets a message through social media from this guy, the same man she saw in this dream or this astral projection state, trying to kind of confirm his experiment that she saw him. And he had been working on some sort of device to control this sort of thing. So that could be how the interference happened. Creepy, bizarre, you know, you could easily call it far-fetched, but it's interesting. You know, for a show, we talk about ghosts where many things are possible. I got to put it in the realm of possibility. And if, in fact, is real, intriguing, very intriguing.
Yeah, it's one more thing that scares the shit out of me, really.
It is. I mean, it's very scary to think of, especially if it's something that can be honed in on and controlled. Because that could be world-changing if it ever were to get really meddled down to that. Yeah.
The whole Adolf Hitler thing, you know what I'm going to be dreaming about tonight? Adolf Hitler's astral projecting into my life or something.
Yeah. You can look that up. I mean, it is, there's historical, you know, there was, I don't know what it's, you know, parts of his Reich or whatever that were working on this sort of science, trying to get, there's a whole bunch of weird, spooky, fucked up things that he was working on. And I'm not a buff on any of that to know it, but from the little bit that I've heard over the years or have seen, it's a very interesting area and very spooky, because it's not conventional type things. It's a lot of these.
No, it's not conventional.
Using, you know, things that otherwise people would say that's impossible. It doesn't exist. Occult type things, and very, very bizarre. Anyway, 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let's go to another letter. It says, I was 16 years old back in the 80s, and it was during this time I once made a passing comment to my older sister, 17 years my senior, about Ouija boards. I wondered whether they were real. I think at the time we were having a conversation about various board games, and I was vaguely recalling her and my mother and my other older sisters having a Ouija board when I was really young, about 4 or 5. Anyways, I always wondered if they really worked or they were just another board game. Sometime later, that same sister picked up a Ouija board for me at a flea market for $2. She gave it to me and said that she remembered me talking about it and wondered about it. She saw one for a bargain, so she picked it up for me so that I could satisfy my curiosity. My sister had two daughters, my nieces, who were 3 years and 5 years younger than me. We grew up together and spent a lot of time together, just like sisters. I spent a lot of my time at their house and vice versa. When I first received the Ouija board, I sat down with each of them in their bedroom and we all attempted to get it to work. At first, it did nothing, even after several questions. I remember that we remained persistent, and eventually it began to move very slowly from letter to letter, spelling out an answer. I remember how shocked we were, each asking the other, did you move it? None of us felt as though we were moving it. I know that skeptics claim that this movement is called the, item motor effect. I'm not sure. I do believe that probably a lot of Ouija board activity is just that. However, because of the way things progressed over the next several months, I believe at some point things switched over to something much more than that effect for us and our experiences. My nieces and I played with the Ouija board after school almost every day for about 6 months. Most of the time, we played it at their house, but sometimes we played it at my house. The board appeared to be very active and receptive to all our questions. We had no idea how it was working. We just knew that it was working. That alone kept us coming back for more because it was so odd and mysterious. We didn't know if it was our minds doing it or a ghost, a demon, angel, or some other explanation. We just didn't know. We just knew it was working. It moved quickly. The planchette would go from letter to letter going around in circular motions in between letters. We asked a typical teenage question such as who we're going to marry, etc. Sometimes we asked it questions that we knew the answer to, and sometimes we asked it questions that we did not know the answers to. From this, we learned that sometimes it tells the truth and sometimes it tells us the wrong answer, but it always answered. We even tried to get it to tell us what the daily lottery number was going to be. Then we'd watch the drawing at 7 p.m. on TV to see if it was right. It never was, but we found it amusing to ask. The months went by and we continued this amusement in almost an obsessive way. Adults around us knew we were playing with it, and for whatever reason, there was no discouragement from any of them to stop playing with it. So I guess nobody thought anything of it. There was nothing scary about the answers and conversations with the board, but one day that all changed. One night I was having a sleepover with one of my nieces at my own house, so we brought the Ouija board to my house to play with it. It was just the two of us who were still up. We were in the living room with the TV on in the background. We had the board on the coffee table between us. We began playing with it as we normally did, but then the planchette stopped moving. It felt as though it was locking itself in the center of the board. It was unresponsive and even felt a little resistant to our finger pressure when we gently pushed on it to try and get it to move. My niece and I looked at each other with puzzled expressions because it had never done this before. Then slowly, the planchette began to move without being prompted by a question. It moved slowly to the letter H, and then to E, and then to H-E, H-E. Our fingers, who are still on it, just kind of going along for the ride. I said out loud, is it laughing at us? Meaning he-he, as in a laugh? The planchette went to no. My niece then said, I think it's heavy breathing. The planchette then went to yes. Then it began to spell out things to us, unprompted by any question from us. It began to spell out profane language, telling us its name, which I don't remember and wouldn't repeat if I did. It kept spelling out all sorts of profanity, including comments about male genitalia. It was bizarre, and at this point in my life, I have to say that I was pretty much a goody-goody type of kid and did not drink, smoke, do drugs, or use profane language. So we were not on drugs or anything like that when this happened. Neither one of us was in the habit of using that kind of language, though we were familiar with it. We had friends who spoke that way. It was just shocking and alarming to see the board move in this direction after all of these months. At first, we laughed and thought it was funny, but very quickly, that turned to fear. I decided it was time to get rid of the board, gave it to my father, and asked him to throw it away for me. He told me to just walk it outside to the trash can in the backyard if I didn't want it. I told him I couldn't do it and that I needed him to do it. He didn't really know how involved I had gotten with this board, and he was not a religious or spiritual man anyway, so he thought I was overreacting and being silly about not wanting to touch it anymore, but I just explained to him that regardless of what he thought, I just needed to not touch it anymore. So to appease me, he threw it out, and that was that. Afterward, I did not continue to experience any weird phenomena in that house or in my life. Thankfully, life went on as usual. But later, when I was in college, I became a Christian. At that time, I remembered my experience with the Ouija board. I was convinced, and still am, that I had encountered something sinister with that board. So, as a Christian, I felt I wanted to pray about it and renounce my involvement with the board. So I did just that. Not touched anything like that since. I take it seriously where in the Bible it says to not attempt to talk to the dead. I believe it is because we don't have any understanding of these supernatural things, and so we don't know what we are really talking to. I believe it is for our own protection that we are told to not do it. I don't think science will ever be able to fully capture or explain such paranormal activities, and I'm referring to the things that truly are paranormal and otherworldly. At the same time, I support science and logic and believe that many things that appear to be otherworldly really are not. And they will be explained with logical and scientific explanations, just like so many superstitions of yesteryear. That said, my leaning and the learning that I experienced was otherworldly. Sinister being is what I think it was. I'm open to that being disproven by a perfectly logical explanation someday, but I also believe that if it really was a sinister being, it won't be able to be explained or disproven. I appreciate hearing about the paranormal experiences of others because it helps me to know that I am not alone, that I'm not the only one, but I avoid directly participating in seances and other similar practices. And that wraps up that story.
So you have been doing this a long time. You've heard a bunch of Ouija board stories. Have you ever heard one story where it helped someone in any way? Because the Ouija board just gives me the creeps. But have you ever encountered somebody going, man, I got so much out of that?
Yeah. It's rare. I'd say maybe 1 in 200. I've heard a couple over the years, but it's rare.
Because it seems like most of them are like, I feel like I open a door to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, some demonic sort of thing, rather than, yeah, there was, you know, I chatted with this ghost. It was awesome. Gave me some great life advice.
Yeah.
But you mostly hear stories like that.
You do. You
and
hear.
So, like, one day on the Facebook group page,
yeah,
somebody was talking about Ouija boards and how, what's the matter with everybody? Why do you hate them so much? And I go, because of that. Like, nobody really walks away going, that was a great experience.
Yeah. It is rare. There have been a couple where it was I contacted my deceased son or something of that nature, and they ended it. And they ended that was it. They didn't keep going back to talk. But it gave them some sort of peace and closure, and that was that. It's not
See,
to say
that's why I think I don't have a problem talking to dead people if you could.
Yeah.
Because sometimes that's all you want.
Yeah.
Is just that. Like when I went to, Teresa Caputo,
mm-hmm.
like that was fascinating to me, the things that she was coming up with.
Sure.
I mean, I didn't get read, but listening to what she was saying to other people, it was fascinating to me.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because there's all different ways now to essentially communicate with the dead. You know, the Ouija board is so MySpace. It's the MySpace of communicating with the other side. It's just like that nobody's using Ouijas anymore. But I mean, they are.
Right.
But I mean, there's other ways of doing this with technology and software and all different things. And I think a lot of when you take the people aspect out of it, I'm not talking about psychics or mediums that are delivering messages as a human being, as a vessel. But when you're using technology pieces of the day, I think you open the same sort of doors that a Ouija board does, quite honestly. I think you could be opening and getting communication from anything, good and bad. But it's you never know exactly what it is that you're going to get at the end of the day.
Yeah, agreed.
But
because, you know, if you, I think like Teresa Caputo, for example, like I think some of those people know how to turn it on and off. And you and I don't.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like that with a Ouija board. You're opening up a door to something that you don't really know what the door is to.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going, oh, I'll open the door.
And
I don't think you're really prepared for that, most of us.
No, I mean, there are ways to prepare. But I've talked to a lot of very experienced investigators. And the last thing that most experienced investigators on an investigation are going to use is a Ouija board. They're using more modern equipment to try and communicate that's a lot more scientific in terms of getting records. But I ask them the question quite frequently because a lot of them will say, you know, you try and protect yourself from something latching on, from attachment, something negative. And I said, that's great. And I think that's smart. And with years of experience of doing this, you probably know ways of protecting yourself. But is there ever truly a foolproof way of completely protecting yourself? Is there ever a way to guarantee that dark as fuck place that you just went into, that all these people have all these horrific experiences and stories about, is there ever a way for you to guarantee that you're going to walk out of there without having something attached to you with whatever thing, ritual, whatever it is you're doing to protect yourself? And the answer is always no. There's never a 100% bulletproof way of doing it. Essentially, there's ways of putting on a really good, you know, full body of armor, but there's still a way it can break through if it's powerful enough or that's what the intent is going to be.
And those are professionals.
Yeah, those are professionals. So, you know, Bill's, haunted investigation team that got together through Meetup and they want to go investigate, you know, hauntings. Those are a lot of the cases you get where it's like, you know, these people, they're inexperienced. And it's not that there's anything wrong with starting someplace, but you got to learn what the hell you're doing before you just dive headfirst into it and how to protect yourself and best practices is really what it comes down to. The thing is, there's a lot of resources out there now on how to do that, which is good.
But I think most of us, our experience with Ouija boards when we were like 10, our first experience, you know, 10 or 12, sure. You know, we're just little kids playing with that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's marketed as a game. It's on the shelf right next to Candyland.
Yeah.
I think Milton Bradley or it's one of them that owns it. And yeah, it's just. It's funny that that's something that has never, of all the games that you see come and go over the years, that the Ouija board has always maintained. There's never been a, you know, I can't imagine it's a super hot seller, but it must sell enough that it's always there.
Oh, yeah. And now I think it's like a novel, you know, like in those novelty stores, you'll find it.
Mm-hmm. It's
I just think it's interesting because you don't hear anybody going, that was such a positive experience.
No, you don't. I mean, it is rare. It's very segmented as to how it was used as well. But it does tend to be a lot more negative than anything else. So anyway, that right there is going to wrap up this episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, become an extra podcast person, an EPP, help support the show, keep it on the air. Sign up at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Carol, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to Real Ghost Stories Online.